visiting today with Dr. Rodney Holcomb, OSU Ag Economics Department, and you were talking today at our conference, and man, you had some really good stuff to talk about, Oklahoman small meat processors. Tell us, everybody, what some of the realities are of those meat processing plants that we're actually seeing right now.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we've talked for a long time about the need to have a viable small meat processing industry, and it's good that we have one. And Oklahoma is one of those states where we've got a strong tradition of that. We've got strong demand. Some of the realities were that that before COVID, our small plants were already backed up. The local food movement and everyone wanting to have that locally raised and locally processed meat, we were backed up 3 to 6 months. Most plants were. Then all of a sudden COVID hits, and then we go to a year, year and a half, 2 years out, just to book a kill date for a steer. Mm-hmm. We've seen some of that drop off recently, of course, but that's some of the realities of it. It's not just that the big plants had trouble during COVID. Our small plants were already running past full capacity, and both big and small plants lost labor.
Right.
We lost the labor. Either folks got sick and couldn't work, or for health reasons, they decided, you know what, I'll stay home for a while. I've got to take care of somebody else. I need to distance myself socially, whatever the case may be. And that just put us even deeper in the hole. So even as we're working hard now to make sure that we strengthen and solidify that local meat processing industry, we're still a good year or two away from having enough labor to support not only the plants we had, but the ones that we're bringing online.
Tell us a little bit about the different types of meat processing plants.
Okay. We've got, first of all, we'll just throw out the retail exempt. Those are the folks that don't do any slaughter. They buy the meat. The animal's already been slaughtered. They're making products out of the cuts of meat. So we won't talk too much about them. But most people, when they think of those small meat processing plants, they think the ones that are doing slaughter. And those, you have three kinds. You have custom exempt. That's your animal going in and your meat coming out. It's not for sale. It was that club calf or that hog you had on the farm that you took to the butcher, they slaughtered it, and you got the meat back. Or in some cases, we have a lot of folks that buy the animal from the rancher, take it to the custom exempt processor, and then it's their meat going home. Then you have state inspected, and a state inspection, not every state has a state inspection system, but we do, run out of the State Department of Ag, Food, and Forestry. And their standards are equal to or better than the federal standards, the USDA Food Safety Inspection Service standards. Biggest difference is the state plants, you can sell that meat in any restaurant or any grocery store in the state of Oklahoma, but not outside the state of Oklahoma. Whereas the federally inspected plants, doesn't matter where the processing was done, that meat can be sold in any state, any grocery store, any restaurant. In fact, you can even export it. Mm-hmm. So that tends to be the biggest difference. Most people like to talk about mobile slaughter as well, but even mobile slaughter, it's got to fall in one of those three categories, custom, state, or federal.
Well, you mentioned that Oklahoma's had a 30% decline in our meat processors, not even because of COVID, and you touched on this a little bit, but what are some of the reasons that we've lost that?
Yeah, that was actually going back from the 1980s up to 2000. And there were a lot of reasons. A big change in technology. So you had some really big plants that came in and really changed the way the meat industry operates. And whether you, no matter what your feelings are about the big packer industry, it's folks that had a lot of money. They came into areas where they could buy some land and build these really big, efficient facilities. And they cranked out a lot of meat. All of a sudden, we don't have butcher shops and supermarkets anymore. The meat already shows up packaged, ready to sit in the display case and ready to sell. So that change in technology that allowed them to really mass produce the product impacted our small plants. Now, at the same time, we had a bunch of small plants that were getting a little old, getting a little decrepit. It became time to update them. And you had a generation of kids who said, I don't want to go back into mom and dad's or the grandparents' line of work. I'm not interested. I'm the tech industry is booming. Oil and gas is booming. There's plenty of opportunities for me somewhere else. Yeah. But you also had food safety standards really ramp up in the late 1990s. And we had a lot of plants that said, I don't want to have to revise the way I operate. I'm going to have to modify my plant. I don't want to have to hire another person to be my food safety coordinator. And that's just more money coming out of my pocket if I've got to hire somebody else. So they decided to go custom exempt or just decided, you know, maybe it's time to shut it down. So that was leading up to 2000. Then starting about 2000, we get the local food movement take off. It's kind of like we can't get the demand and the suppliers to work together. It's just, we're so close. Yeah, you know, right place, wrong time, wrong place, right time, whatever it is.
Well, you also talked about some support groups and support programs that are going to be able to help our meat processing plants. So tell everybody about those.
You know, the state of Oklahoma is one of the first states to jump out and say, we need to do something to respond to the concerns about the unavailability of meat in the supermarket. So during the COVID pandemic, the state, Secretary Author, and the governor, they set aside $10 million and say, we're going to put this towards plants that can help us put meat in stores. Mm-hmm. And make it publicly available. So $10 million went out to a bunch of plants in the state of Oklahoma to help them expand to handle this burgeoning demand for product. We had some other states that followed suit, but Oklahoma was really one of the first ones to jump out and commit to it. Since then, we've seen a lot of different programs come out of USDA, the Ag Marketing Service, the Food Safety Inspection Service. There's Build Back Better funds, hundreds of millions of dollars that USDA has already said is going to be set aside. All of that for bringing new plants into the industry or to take some of these small custom exempt plants and help them upgrade to be state or federally inspected, get that meat into the stores and into the restaurants.
And you mentioned that being pretty good news because, like you said, that's going to bring more facilities into our state.
It does. It brings facilities into the state. The one thing it does not do, at least not at this point, is bring the trained meat cutters into the state. Honestly, that's one of our biggest concerns. And if you go back 20 years ago, it was a big concern then. And it just so happens that we get a lot of people that work really hard, and those meat cutters, they work really hard. But if they get a chance, you know, like oil and gas prices shoot up and all of a sudden the industry is hiring people at some pretty great wages, then they'll jump ship and go there. And you can't blame them. They're taking care of themselves. They're taking care of their family, their future. But once we lose them, we lose like a generation of meat cutters. And we don't even have the meat cutter programs, training programs that we used to have. So we're behind the eight ball on that.
Well, and you know, you mentioned everybody in the world right now having a labor shortage. It's just hard to find good help, and meat processing, they're right in there with it.
Exactly. Even at the big packing plants, you can walk in right now untrained. I mean, I'm a college professor, so that means I'm untrained for everything. I don't know anything.
Me too.
Yeah, they could use me on the maintenance schedule for $20 an hour right now, so or better. So there are a lot of people, big and small meat processors, that are looking for labor that can help them in any way, shape, or form. If you happen to have some meat cutting skills, you can make a pretty nice penny that way.
Well, what are some issues that the slaughter plants have right now? We kind of mentioned meat processing plants and slaughter plants. Besides labor, obviously that's a big one.
Right. Besides labor, if you wanted to build or expand, which is one of the big issues for us, as we saw the growing demand, there were a lot of plants that said, I don't need a bigger slaughter floor. I don't need more bandsaws or meat grinders or things like that. What I need is cold storage space. Mm. And with everything else, as we've already seen, you can't find it. Concrete prices are high. Steel prices are high. Wood prices are high. It's hard to find parts because nobody is either making the parts or you can't get them shipped. Mm-hmm. So that's a big cost. So even those that say, I've got great business and I've got business that will support an expansion, they're finding out that the cost of doing so is tremendously high right now. And if you wanted to find additional equipment, you can't. It's all back ordered. So you're waiting 6 months, year and a half, just to try to get the equipment.
Yeah. So looking forward, what's some positive things that meat processing plants and workers can do as we're kind of trying to get over this hump?
I think one of the positive takeaways from this whole thing is that, and I'll use the state of Oklahoma as an example, we've had meetings in the last several years looking at how overtaxed or, well, that's the wrong word to use. I don't want to say tax, but how overworked our small plants are. They're working at 100+% capacity. They were already before COVID booking animals to be processed 3 to 6 months or even longer out. So there was always the concern of, I see the opportunity to expand. I just don't have the resources, and I want to make sure I've got some way to limit the risk. If I'm going to spend all this money to build, can I be assured of a future market?
Yeah.
And I think one thing we've seen out of this, there's a lot of that demand that popped up last year for that local butcher. It's going to drop off, but we still have some of it. We know it's going to stay. There's going to be some of those folks that are all of a sudden they've gone back. Maybe they're a generation removed from having that freezer beef. Yeah. Or that hog they slaughter every year and put it in the freezer at home. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to see more people come back to that. And once they get the taste of that, once they realize how nice it is to have a stockpile of meat in the freezer, mm-hmm. they kind of like it. And some of these programs will allow these plants that have been on the fence for years about should we expand, should we not expand, mm-hmm. can we really afford to? Some of these programs are going to help them do so. And I think eventually in the next year or so, we'll get back to where we've got more plants. They'll still be booked a month or two in advance, but they will have the assurance of enough demand to justify the pennies and hard-earned dollars that they put in to making those expansions.
Well, Dr. Holcomb, great information today. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you very much, Casey.